Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Be future ready with a pension powered by Zurich's award-winning investment performance.
Last year, TUSLA revealed that false information was recorded on birth certificates of 126 people who were adopted through St. Patrick's Guild Adoption Agency in Dublin in the years 1946 to 1969. Now, a number of those affected are suing the state. We're going to hear from one of them in a moment. But first, I'm joined by Norman Spicer, who's a solicitor with Coleman Legal Partners, which represents 15 of those taking cases at the moment. Norman, good evening.
Good evening, Mary.
This question of false information on birth certificates, can you give us some examples of the false information that was recorded?
Yes, well, what we've witnessed so far with the clients who've made contact with our offices is that there's more than just the birth certs in the files that have been forged. Oftentimes we've found baptismal certs which also show evidence of fraudulence. It goes all the way, you know, in terms of the records. They just can't be relied on at all from what we can see so far.
And you would have had birth parents not recorded or adoptive parents recorded as birth parents? Dates of birth changed?
Yes, often dates of birth will not be the same as on the original birth cert. Many times the clients are not even aware that they actually have two birth certs. They have all of their identification and lives based off the birth cert that names their, for want of a better word, adoptive parents as their birth parents. And so oftentimes, since, you know, a lot of them have been approached by TUSLA and by the government last May, have only just become aware that they actually have another birth cert.
This all happened between the years 1946 to 1969. Is it good enough to suggest that the laws were not there at the time to provide for the proper taking and keeping of records?
I'm not so sure that it was a gap in the legislation at the time. There was, the 1952 Adoption Act, did set forth certain requirements that needed to be followed, but they just weren't followed. So you can have all the legislation in the world that you want to cover a certain instance. If it's just completely ignored and not followed, then. Mm.
And birth cert, a birth cert is a legal document that should not be tampered with.
Correct, yeah.
Why? This is the question people ask over and over again. Why were these details changed? Maybe it's still speculative. Maybe we have some facts.
Well, what we do know is that, under the requirements of the 52 Act, in order for consent, consent had to be gained by the birth mother in order to adopt the child. So we know that up until 1974, the child would have to have been 6 months old in order to be adopted. And also the adoptive parents would need to be ordinarily resident within the state. So it's at least arguable to say that one of the reasons why, that they avoided the requirements under the law were that by just having the instrument recorded as a birth and not as an adoption, they could sidestep all of the requirements under the law.
And in some cases, and the 126 we're talking about, did another set of papers exist? Or do we know if another set of papers exists? Or is that why some are now going to court to find out?
Do you mean in terms of...
Did we have another set of papers, another birth cert or another baptismal cert? Did further papers exist that recorded the actual facts, the truth?
Yeah, well, for the most part, what we've seen so far with the 15 clients who've given us instructions is that, they do have other documents, an original, true and accurate birth cert, and then the later forgery.
Now, the Sisters of Charity ran St. Patrick's Guild, and this was an adoption agency. It wasn't a mother and baby home. They finished operations in 2014, and then they handed over all of these documents to TUSLA, which is, as you say, how many have discovered about their... And I suppose many have discovered as well for the first time because of this that they were adopted.
Yeah, from what I've read at this stage, I believe about 75... of the individuals who were contacted were already aware that they were adopted.
The rest were not?
From what I can gather. No, I haven't obviously been in contact with the full amount.
Of course, but the people that you know, the people that you are in touch with and the people you now represent, is it important to them that St. Patrick's Guild and the Sisters of Charity apologise?
Yeah, I think it's a really vital part of the whole case. You know, like, of all the clients that have approached us, I mean, really, there's the concern that they have is just that they want to ensure that, you know, for one, that they have a true and accurate and full, complete copy of, you know, all of the records that pertain to them, you know, in the first instance. You know, like, there's many things that they're looking for, and one of them, you know, would be, you know, an apology and maybe an explanation. And, you know, I understand there's a report being finalised at the moment. I think, you know, the bulk of these 126 individuals would certainly be keen to understand and to review, you know, the terms of the report and what the outcomes are from it.
Mm. And this will be part of the legal actions that you're now preparing in relation to the 15 you represent. You'll be suing Ireland and the Attorney General. Will you be suing St. Patrick's Guild and the Sisters of Charity as well?
Well, at this point, I can only confirm the St. Patrick's Guild will be a named defendant in the proceedings, although they're in liquidation at the moment.
And Ireland and the Attorney General, the state names when you're taking these actions.
Yeah.
The information was made available by TUSLA, now in receipt of all these documents. Is there further information? And if there is further information, is the dissemination of that information maybe difficult for TUSLA because of GDPR, for example?
I think GDPR certainly has had an effect on TUSLA's decision making in allowing access to these individuals of their records. I mean, look, we obviously need legislation, and you know, the adoption and tracing bill is still making its way through government at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's certainly well needed, and because, you know, in like to these instances, you know, the GDPR is obviously not finalised in light of this kind of scenario. So, you know, clearly there's a gap in the legislation there. But certainly our experience and our clients' experience to date has been that they haven't, you know, received full and complete records that, you know, oftentimes, I mean, we're probably 10, 11 months on now, and some of them, you know, still haven't received the full, you know, balance of their records.
All right.
So that's certainly, you know, something that needs attention.
Gaps in their knowledge. Norman Spicer, solicitor with Coleman Legal Partners, thank you. And we're going to hear now from one of those who is affected, who believes he has gaps in his knowledge as well, and he's taking a case against the state. I spoke to Patrick Fitzsimons, and he told me how he found out he was adopted when his elderly mother, his adoptive mother, told him about the real circumstances of his birth for the first time.
In around 1996, my mother sat me down one evening. She had some reason to believe that I had some intuition or some knowledge of the fact that she and my father were not my real parents. But she felt that the time had come when she had to tell me the truth, to unburden herself of the secret that she'd held for 35 odd years. My father was already dead at this point, so he took his secret, his take on things to the grave. But my mother, she felt that I deserved to know, and despite the fact that she had made a promise, as she told me, to the church, to the guild, to whoever, that I would not be told, she thought that she would ignore that and tell me the truth because she thought it was only fair.
And Patrick, the promise she made, was that promise that she would never tell you that you had been adopted?
The precise ins and outs of it, I only have from her perspective on the night that she told me. What she said to me was that I had been the product of a liaison between a married Protestant man, a young innocent Catholic girl, that in respect, out of respect for this girl's reputation, that it would be better that no information was ever divulged or sought thereafter, and that they, my adoptive parents, should just walk quietly away. There was no real sense at the time that the church or the guild realized, you know, what an imposition they were placing on my adoptive parents, that hereafter their lives could not be conducted openly and honestly. They had to conceal from their own families the fact that they had not had me by natural means.
Your parents had to really, I suppose, live out a lie, live out a deceit, not just
completely.
To you, but to their entire family, to their entire community. And they did that because your mother said she'd been asked to make this promise.
Yes, that is my very clear understanding on the basis of what she told me.
And in your investigations, Patrick, in
yes,
the investigations
sorry.
You've conducted since, was that true? Were your natural parents a married Protestant man, as you said, and an innocent
no.
Catholic girl?
No. No, no, that was very far from the truth.
So tell me about your investigations to uncover your background.
I mean, initially, and in deference to what my mother had asked of me, I didn't really act on it. But my wife very soon thereafter said, look, you really need to inquire into, you know, get whatever information you can, because there could be medical conditions within your natural family that we know nothing about that could affect you or your children. So on that basis, and after a couple of years, I decided I should look seriously into what happened. I didn't even know where to begin in terms of the authorities in the Irish Republic. I spoke to social services agencies here in the north, and eventually one of them said, you might try St. Patrick's Guild in Dublin. So I did that around the early noughties. And very slowly, they came back to me with very, very sparse information. What information I received from them was drip-fed to me over many years, regardless of what they knew as to be fact at the outset.
Are you saying that they weren't open and transparent with the information they had to hand initially?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. They would have known, for example, that my birth mother was dead. They didn't tell me that.
Did you learn that your mother, your birth mother, had tried to find you?
Yes, I did. I subsequently discovered that she had approached the guild in the late 70s, probably about 10 years before she died, and said she'd be very keen to speak to me.
They didn't tell you that?
They didn't tell me any of this, no, no.
You had a sibling?
I had a sibling, indeed, a full-blood sibling.
They didn't tell you that either?
Well, they did eventually, but I think maybe 4 years into my inquiries, I'd been down visiting with the Guild in Dublin several occasions. From the off, they treated the whole thing with great sensitivity in terms of not just in terms of how I might respond to the information that I received, but also they were very cognizant, they said, of the harm and hurt that may be caused to others if I were to charge off into my inquiries unhindered. As you can imagine, you know, they told me sort of various sort of horror stories of people who had...
And when did you find out, Patrick, when did you find out about the birth certificates?
Well, I mean, the birth certificate, the one I still have, the only one I have, was you know, it was a done deal in our family. There was my birth certificate. It named my adoptive parents as my natural parents, and that was a fait accompli, as I understood it. There was nothing I could do about it. I assumed, obviously, that it had been falsified. My mother told me at the time she revealed the truth of my adoption, she told me that there was a law pertaining at the time that children under the age of 2 couldn't be taken out of the state, and that therefore the document had been falsified to enable them to take me to Belfast.
All of the documents from St. Patrick's Guild were handed over to SLA. Did they hand you, were you able to procure documents from TUSLA pertaining to your adoption?
Yes, they gave me five or six pieces of paper, communications that had transpired between us, you know, copies of letters that had been sent back and forth, which confirmed various information. There were a couple of rather poignant handwritten notes from my birth mother to a nun, an unnamed nun. Rather interestingly, there was a particular very short order form which must have been filled in at or around the time of my birth, which named my mother and my father, the priest that had recommended them, the doctor who they were recommended to see, some scant information about monies that were due to be paid by the girl. My mother was referred to as the girl.
Your natural mother, your birth mother.
Yes. Yes.
Your story features in today's Irish Times with the information that there will now be court proceedings. As you say, you learned you are one of the 126 whose births were incorrectly registered between, I think the years run from 1946 to 1969 by the St. Patrick's Guild. What do you hope ultimately?
It would be lovely to have some honesty and candidness and light shed on these issues. That is really all that I can hope for emerging from the litigation. Because if I were to say nothing, if I were to do nothing, I have a sneaking suspicion that nothing would happen.
Patrick Fitzsimons speaking to me a little earlier.